Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. In my 2+ decades as an interfaith minister, I've officiated both joyous and sad services for family and friends. Offering comfort at funerals is always a challenge because grief is a highly individual process, and the greatest comfort comes from sacred presence, empathic listening, and offering a few compassionate words, when appropriate. From personal family experience prior to my ministry, I learned that when someone loses a child, there simply are no words to comfort the bereaved. The best we can do is to create sacred loving presence in whatever form they request. But is there another form of comfort and reassurance that may be offered from the other side? My guest this week on Vox Novus, Sandy Cowan, learned through the loss of her adult son, John, that transition is not an end, but a new beginning. Sandy has always been dedicated to the empowerment of others as an entrepreneur, community leader, and expert on the holistic healing process. Now an author and speaker, she shares a gift she's kept hidden for decades. Prompted by her son's passing, Sandy is coming forward with her story to help others find peace and joy in the face of profound loss. Her website is sandycowan.com, and she joins me this week to share her story and her new book, Hi Mama, It's Me, How Souls Stay Connected Forever and the Power of Undying Love. Please join me in welcoming to Vox Novus, Sandy Cowan. Welcome, Sandy.
Welcome right back, Victor. It's a pleasure to join you today.
Thank you so much. Sandy, your story actually starts with an amazing and successful career, followed by a series of devastating health challenges. Please share your path with our listeners meeting you for the first time.
Sure. I was in a very high-stress industry initially, and that was the advertising and public relations field. So anybody who's ever watched the TV series Mad Men, I mean, I lived that. So, you know, we had martini lunches, and we burned ourselves out, and everybody smoked cigarettes, and it was a very high-stress time. I started my firm in 73, went the first 8 years with no vacation, undercapitalized, fast-growing, was a mom, was a wife, was on a number of community boards. Anyway, after about 8 years, my body gave out, and that was the beginning of the first of a number of autoimmune-based chronic and life-threatening illnesses that popped up over the next 35 years. So after I tried conventional medicine, like most dutiful patients do, I spent about a year and a half doing that and realized that I wasn't really getting any better. My meds were just getting stronger. So I said, the heck with this, you know, they were going to put me on a mild form of chemotherapy. And I thought, my gosh, my body, I was 37 at the time and my body was falling apart. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to do more damage. And my husband then said to me, what are you going to do? And I said, I have no idea, but I'm not doing this. And that, Victor, I think, was the first time I really opened up and just surrendered. I was not a religious person. I had been raised Roman Catholic. I'd converted to Judaism. I wasn't practicing anything at the time. I was kind of ecumenical and had my own direct connection. But I didn't realize what surrender was, and I think that's what I did. But before I knew it, answers began to come to me. And over a course of a number of years, I would try things that would work. My body would be my guide, my North Star. And if something worked, I kept doing it or using it. And if it didn't work, I discarded it. So my body was the judge and jury here. And I found that healing, total healing, on all three levels, spiritual, emotional, and physical, is cumulative and progressive. So while I was, the reason I kind of did a little detail about the RA story is because when I stopped all medication, because in fact any drug technically weakens the immune system, it either does the work of it, so the immune system just sits on the bench, or it actually suppresses it. Every single drug that's out there does. And so I thought, no, I'm going to get my immune system back healthy, and I'm going to let my body regain its equilibrium, and I'm not taking anything. So with the horrific pain of rheumatoid arthritis, I used to spend a lot of time being perfectly still, because I found that the more my mind was active, the more the pain exacerbated. And it would get worse at night, and I would kind of practice keeping so mentally quiet that maybe I could break the thought of the pain from the actual feeling of the pain. And even if I could do it for a second, I felt like I had some control. Long story short, taught myself meditation. So I began becoming more blank and more in the moment, not even realizing what I was doing. And after years of really, I meditated in the car, I meditated in meetings, I meditated watching TV. As long as your mind is totally still, you're doing what most do in meditation. And so when you're blank a long time, you can receive. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
When your mind isn't spinning and active, you've got room to hear the whispers. And I began probably about 3 or 4 years into that journey. The first thing for me was transitioning spirits, and that was everything in my life was accidental. But we had somebody living in her house, and it was totally accidental that I happened to send her over. And then all of a sudden, many more were brought. And I transitioned many, many spirits over about 5 or 6 years and helped them get to where they needed to be. Then other messages began coming to me. And the reason I didn't tell anybody about this is because I didn't even know what the heck it was. Mm. You know? And I thought, and I was a very credible person. I mean, I had a rock solid reputation. I was on a ton of boards. I was in the political community. I was in the social community, and I'm not going to run around telling people I'm a psychic or I'm a medium or I'm a channel. In fact, I didn't even know what I was. So anyway, that just went on for years. I recovered from all of my conditions, leukemia twice, rheumatoid arthritis, hyperthyroidism, number of them. And then when I had another bout of illness, the illness came in two tranches. The first was from 1981 until about, 1995, 6, something like that. The second one came 2009 through 2016. And now again, I am perfectly well. But during the last phase of that second tranche, I actually thought I was going to be out of here. The neutropenia trend line, which was declining, that's when your immune system basically stops functioning.
Now, in addition to the meditation, what did you bring to bear in terms of your healing process?
Well, actually, for the leukemia, I did high-dose vitamin C because I was drawn to that, and my body responded well. And then I also did some emotional work. So the first, I'm sort of a follower of Louise Hayes. Well, I don't follow her, but I would go to her book often and look up the emotional root cause of a particular illness. And I found that with leukemia, I was almost totally well the first time, just after about 18 months of doing high dose C, but I couldn't get one marker to drop and I couldn't figure it out. So I looked it up in her book, and for me, it was lack of joy. And I thought, what the heck does joy feel like? I knew happy, I knew excited, I knew enthusiastic, I knew all kinds of stuff, but I couldn't muster that joy feeling. And my first grandson was born, my first grandchild was born shortly after, during this period. And I was, of course, excited, but it wasn't joyful. And when Charlie was born, John walked out of the delivery room with this little bundle, and of course, I was excited. And I walked up to see him, and when I saw his face, Victor, he looked exactly like my son did when he was born. And something came over me that was overwhelming. My entire body reacted, and I said, oh my God, this is joy.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I would call the kids all the time, and I'd say, can I watch Charlie, or can I come over and get a Charlie fix? And I called Charlie my joy boy, actually. Within 3 months, that last marker dropped like a rock, and I was totally perfect.
So you went from this type A personality, a devoted businesswoman, I believe founded the first, you were the first woman to found an advertising agency, right?
In Arizona.
In Arizona, and you had this amazing business, entrepreneurial skills, working, pounding it out, pounding it out, pounding it out. And it took the disease to give you the truth.
Yes. And all along, every occurrence that some may have judged as bad, I had no judgment about. And in retrospect, everyone was a gift. Without the illness, I never would have learned to quiet my mind. I never could have started receiving. And when I thought I was actually dying at one point, a couple of doctors thought I probably wouldn't last a long time. I mean, I wasn't in bed or anything like that, but I was getting more, a little bit more compromised. And so I'm putting all these things together for my son, and I have little thing poster things up in little signs. And when you open the cupboard in the laundry room where the iron is, it still says use only distilled water in the iron. So John had come to live with me the last 2 years of his life. My son suffered from addiction issues, but he was extraordinarily high functioning. He was in commercial real estate. He was very successful, young. And then after a couple back surgeries, well, I'll go into that. He was a high functioning alcoholic for a number of years. And nobody really noticed. He was funny, a good time. And in commercial real estate, that's more of an asset than a liability. But after two back surgeries, and they load him up with oxycodone and, those things, and John became hooked. And I don't think anybody realized how serious it was, but it was. But let me back up a second. So John came to live with me, having, well, this opens up a whole, in the book, I talk about this, having just gotten out of jail. I mean, he was in the renegotiating the terms of his divorce settlement, which was substantial, actually. And he didn't have an attorney with him. And I think the judge was probably tired of constant renegotiation, and he just threw him in jail. So John, it was his second time of starting over in the same industry. And when he got out, I hardly knew him. He looked like a homeless guy, and It was very sad. And I said, honey, you just come live with me. He had lost his apartment, lost his car got towed. And anyway, I said, come live with me till you get on your feet. And he had yet another job back in commercial real estate. And he was he was well known, and he was quite successful, actually. But addiction will just destroy your life, you know. So while he was living with me is when I put those signs all around my house, and I thought I was preparing everything for when I passed. And then what happened on July 2nd of 2018, my son hadn't left for work. And I thought, gee, that's odd. It was 8:30, and he was always right out the door, very optimistic, very positive. He was my salesman. And I tapped on the door, and I said, John, honey, can you hear me? And I'd tap, and it was eerily quiet. You know, Victor, it wasn't like an empty room. It was like something else. And eventually, I had to sort of open the door a little bit, and I saw his arm extended in bed, which was not normal. And, you know, the odd thing here, the second I saw that, I said, oh, no, to myself. And then when I touched him, I said, you left. Now, that was an unusual reaction. Because from the time my son was born, I never felt like I owned him. You know how some parents have this my blood thing, and they have this huge possessive deal around their family. And I knew John was a gift to me, which is why I named him Jonathan, which is gift of the Lord. Mm-hmm. And so when he left, it was like I knew there was a choice somehow there. And after a couple hours, of course, the police came, the medical, the coroner came, and I'm in another room, but I heard him call out. And I heard him say, I don't know what's happened. He was afraid. He was confused. He said about three or four things, one of them being, I'm scared. Mm. And that just tore my heart out because I didn't think there was anything I could do. But it felt so natural to hear his transition. Do you know what I mean? I didn't think now we're connected. I didn't think anything like that.
We're going to talk about that connection.
Yes.
In the next segment. But before we end the segment, I've got to ask you, there are people out there, parents who have lost children a lot this year, unfortunately, and more so than before. What would you say to them?
Well, I'll tell you, if people can think of passing as more of a transition than a finale, because it is, they are so near to us, I cannot tell you. I mean, it's there. And a lot of people, when they lose a child or lose a family member, they have these regrets. I wish I'd have said this, or I didn't get to say goodbye. But you can still say them. Because I just talk out loud to John, just like he's right here, when he isn't coming to me, you know, I mean, where we really have interaction. But I've had friends where they have just been devastated, and especially because they didn't say something. So I tell them, I said, you know, if you're feeling particularly close to the person at the time, or you feel like it's really overwhelming, the feeling, just sit down and talk to them like they're right here, and they will hear every single word. It's extraordinarily cathartic for the person who does it. Plus, it's very helpful for the person on the other side.
Absolutely. We're going to talk more about that in the next segment. My guest is Sandy Cowan. She's the author of Hi Mama, It's Me, How Souls Stay Connected Forever, and The Power of Undying Love. Sandy, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
Absolutely. My book is available on Amazon. It's in Kindle format and also in paperback, in softcover. And you can also get it on my website, which is Sandy Cowen with an E, COWEN.com. Now, the only thing I will mention, the book just got on Amazon like yesterday, today, I guess. And so my books are being shipped to me for mailing from my website. So if you order from my website where I can actually autograph and things for you, it will probably be a couple weeks for delivery because it'll take time for the books to come and then for me to ship out. So there'll be a slight delay on this initial book receiving process, but
understood.
Yeah.
Understood. And we'll be back with more of Sandy after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for inspired conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book. Take a walk. Unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September. Paint a self-portrait. Catch up on a TV series. Do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
So I'm a cat. And I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Sandy Cowen. She's the author of Hi Mama, It's Me, How Souls Stay Connected Forever, and The Power of Undying Love. So you mentioned finding John after his transition, and then hearing his voice coming to you shortly after his passing. Were you surprised?
I don't remember, because I wasn't thinking about how I felt. I was thinking about him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not exactly sure how I felt. But when I heard him being frightened and scared and confused, my heart was just so connected to him that was all I, you know, all I could focus on. And then, you know, not the next morning, but the morning after that, I was waking up, and I heard a knock on my door. I heard an actual knock on my bedroom door, and I'm the only one who lives in the house, so there weren't many options here. And I squinted my eyes really shut, and I wasn't exactly sure what this was, but I didn't want it to stop. You know what I mean? I thought, if I open my eyes, it might go away. And I saw John's form, kind of vague, but come in through the door and sit in the chair where he'd always sit if he'd come to talk to me. And he just looked stunned. I mean, he just didn't say anything, didn't do anything. He just sat like he was lost. And I initiated the conversation. And of course, like I mentioned to you during the break briefly about transitioning, well, I guess in the first segment, about transitioning souls, I've done a bit of that, but not ever one this important. And I told him, you know, I mean, John didn't exactly know what happened. I explained to him he had passed. I mean, he had died, and he wanted a mulligan. And I said, hey, you can't. Yeah, he loved golf, by the way. Mm. I said, you can't. This is it. And he was so sorry, and he was sorry for leaving his kids, and he was sorry I had to find him, and he was sorry about being so stupid. And what it was an accidental, he had gone out the night before, I think about 2 or 3 weeks prior. He had quit going to AA, and he had pulled away from some of his friends, and I think was back on pills, and went out the night before and bought something on the street, some oxycodone or one of those, and it was laced with fentanyl, and it just killed him instantly. Oh. So that was the deal. He was reckless, and it was, you know, not smart. But anyway, there he was, and he didn't know what to do. And so I said all the corny stuff, Victor. Oh, my God. I think about it, and I think, well, you know, you get desperate. But I told him to look up, and I told him to look for a light or a glow or anything to which he could relax and surrender. And I said, honey, it's going to be fine. Grandma and grandpa will be there, and your dad, and Larry and Ruthie, and Nanny and Papa. And I'm naming all the people that he would know. And, I think we talked for about 20 minutes, but my eyes were so clenched tight. I cannot tell you. And finally, he just faded away. Mm. And so that was early that morning. That evening, I guess 9 or 10 at night, I was totally at peace. Mm. I just felt totally different. And I knew that he was home.
Mm. Wonderful. So you've experienced both clairaudience and clairvoyance.
Yes. I have not seen him since that. Mm. But I hear him. And
I'm sorry, when you hear him, do you hear him in his voice, or do you hear him in your voice inside?
I hear him in my inside voice.
In your voice. Okay, go ahead.
But I catch his reaction. I know whether he's smiling. I can feel his smile. Maybe I do see this. I see the energy of the smile. Mm. And he started coming to me right away. And I will tell you, Victor, I've always had people coming, and when they come, well, for 30 years I've had people coming. When they come, it's always electrical and craziness. Mm-hmm. And then I'll say, before I get all frantic about the computer or worried about the TV, I'll say, is somebody trying to contact me? And I'll hear a yes or no. And if it's yes, I go get my pad and paper. And I sit and I transcribe. I'm kind of like a spiritual secretary. I wouldn't call it automatic writing, because I think that's slightly different, where it's more trancy or more, I don't know. I actually hear and I write, and I will say, you got to slow down. I can't. You got to just slow it down a little bit. And I'm writing. And it doesn't, you can't put in context, really, what you're writing. Sometimes you get it, but sometimes you're thinking, I don't think this makes sense, but you just write. And when I go back and read them, they are profound, every single one. And I have saved every single message over the last 30 years.
Do you think that the messages that you received in all those years were preparing you for what happened with John?
Oh, I do indeed. Because when John, when I was walking one day, one evening, and this was something I didn't transcribe, but I remember he walked with me, you know, sort of. And he was flashing a street light, of course. And I said, "Honey, is that you?" And he said, "Yes, Mama, it's me." And it was always, "Hi, Mama," or "Hi, Mama, it's me," or "Yes, Mama, it's me." And when he said, "Hi, Mama, it's me," one time, he said to me, "Great title for a book, don't you think?" And that guy prodded me, Victor, for, I don't know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks. And he would come 3, 4, 5 times a month to me. And there'd be 5, 6, 7, 8 pages of writing. So I would ask him questions. He would give me marvelous insight. You know, like I said, are you up or down or where are you? Mm-hmm. You know, because I look way up to see where he is and I feel frightened. It didn't feel right. And he said, "No, it's not like that at all." He said, "We're all around you. It's a frequency thing." Mm-hmm. So he, you know, explained things to me. But when I went back and pulled out old messages, they were eerily similar.
Messages you had received from others who had transpired before.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And also from ascended masters and also from God. Now, God did not come to me as often. But I'll tell you, lately, they have bombarded me with this book. They are so eager to get this book out. And I have to tell you, Victor, it's not in the book. So this is your first one to hear it. The reason they're so excited is because everything is soul growth, you know. Getting our souls more pure and more filled with unconditional love and to be more like God is the ultimate goal. And like John said, when I said to him, "Have you seen Jesus or anybody like over there?" And he said, "Well, my frequency isn't quite high enough. I see him, but," he said, "my frequency isn't quite, I'm not pure enough to hang with the big dogs," to quote my son. So when you get to a certain level, and I think that's why people return to, in fact, I know that's why people return to perfect their souls and work on elements so that they can be more forgiving or more loving or more whatever. John told me about his experience with karma, and he was very happy this life was over. But he has been, the reason they're excited is because of our dialogue back and forth, his contrition, his making amends over and over and over. And it's so heartfelt and it's so different every time he talks about, because he was a little poop for probably 25 years to me. And he, as he cleanses, he has grown there remarkably. And I think he has, well, I've heard from others that he has been inspirational, and they realize how this connectedness over the two dimensions accelerates soul growth so much that they are so eager for this book to get out so that I can begin to encourage people to connect with the other side and be still. Because sometimes you simply hear, "I'm sorry," and that is so good for them to be able to say.
Yeah, absolutely. With the work with John and others before him, what was their take on reincarnation?
We didn't specifically talk with the old ones that came. We didn't specifically talk about the term reincarnation, but many of them would say, well, you showed up on the radar screen. And they'd use that term. So I asked John, I said, is there a radar screen up there? And he said, no. But he said, it's kind of like when you reflect on your life and you can see and feel the emotions of all those things that go before, and then you realize where your weaknesses lie and what you need to work on, and then you pull your team together and everybody like takes roles and things, and you come back and you learn through the new experience. But they said radar screen, how do you know how to connect with? And he said it's like flying over LA at night, where you see all the little lights. And he said, everybody that you've touched, bumped into, had a relationship, said hi, anybody in this lifetime that was part of your tribe, when you look down, you see all those little lights. And he said, some shine brighter.
Mm.
And those are the ones with whom you could connect. So I know that when the mediums who get together in these auditoriums and things and do readings, people say, oh, that's just show business. Phooey. Their light is very bright. And if they see or know that their people are near, they'll connect through the bright light to try to get to them. Mm. Because people are closed off themselves. You know, most don't. You know, poo-poo it or ignore the signals. And my gosh, they send signals all the time. And even John said to me, you know, Mom, I throw things, yell and throw things, but nobody pays much attention. So they do try to reach out.
I've been called an old soul, and I feel like I've been here many, many times before. Have they given you any information as to why people like me keep coming back?
Yes. Yes, it's and it's firsthand information. So the person will talk about their own life and why they repeated or why maybe they might come back. You see what I'm saying? So you're hearing the process of the thought process of the soul that's actually doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
And if they look to see, well, examples are easier. So in John's case, he had a couple lifetimes where he was very, very successful, but he was also very arrogant. And he judged others. He couldn't understand why other people couldn't be like him. And just, you know, don't whine. Just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get on with it. You know, he had no compassion, no understanding for anybody else. And this lifetime, he was given a life where he was unable to do anything right.
Mm.
So he could learn what that felt like.
Mm.
And right away, John was very compassionate and loving through his whole life. But in his own life, he suffered terribly because he stepped in it one time after another. Every judgment was flawed. Mm-hmm. And it was painful. It was really painful. But he said, the minute I got here, he said, I knew what my lesson was. I knew what I'd learned. And others have said, you know, I'm so stupid. I think I'm a young soul, to your point.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm young or just ignorant or something, and I'll probably come back again. But I don't even know what I'd work on. Probably some people will just throw me into it, and I'll just experience whatever.
Do some of us come back to serve?
Yes, that's exactly, yes.
Okay. My guest is Sandy Cowan. She's the author of Hi Mama, It's Me, How Souls Stay Connected Forever and the Power of Undying Love. We'll be back with more of Sandy after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
America, your children have an amazing superpower. That's right. They can help save lives by simply washing their hands. Just 20 seconds of thorough hand washing after they've coughed or sneezed or been outside can help fight against the dastardly spread of germs. Armed with only soap and water and hands, your superhero can protect you, your family, and everyone out there in America land. Amazing! Find out more at coronavirus.gov. A message from the CDC and the Ad Council.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Right now, we all feel a little disconnected. For seniors living alone, the isolation can be overwhelming. Connect with an older loved one and have the conversation of a lifetime at StoryCorpsConnect.org/AARP. A message from AARP, StoryCorps, and the Ad Council.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Sandy Cowan. She's the author of Hi Mama, It's Me, How Souls Stay Connected Forever, and The Power of Undying Love. Are there lessons in the sharing that you received from John and others that make us take heart in preparation for our eventual transition?
Yes. I think the biggest one, and really the core of the entire book, which I didn't realize was going to be the core of the entire book until I was near finished, but it's love. Mm. And the reason that the soul returns, for those who believe in reincarnation, is to perfect the soul's purity. And that purity only comes from complete love. And so when they feel, in reflecting on their lives, that they maybe were too judgmental or were angry or were not compassionate or weren't understanding people or whatever, they can choose to return to work on that so that they become more pure. So the more we can do here to try to be more loving and open-hearted, I think that's... open-hearted is the best way for me to describe what this really feels like. It's a sort of internal surrender where you just open your heart. And it's kind of like a dog would roll over and spread its legs, all four, you know, exposing its most vulnerable parts to this human, just really saying, I'm yours, I'm yours. So if we go through life like that, when we meet another person with this innocence and vulnerability, and we become more like a channel and allow God's love to flow through us to others, I will tell you, it is amazingly powerful. People feel it. People are drawn to me all the time. And it's just because I sincerely love them. Mm-hmm. Now, I may not like them. I don't choose to be around a whole lot of them. But that all comes later. The initial meet, and for the initial period of interaction, which is usually, 20 minutes? I don't know, whatever. That's absolutely pure. So that's one thing. The other thing, the process of transition itself is sometimes challenging. Like for John. John had no idea he was going to die, and so he was confused and scared and had all these things going on. And it took him about 2.5, almost 3 days to make his transition. And I asked him, I said, is that normal or what? And he said, well, I had just attended a funeral, and a friend of mine's mother passed who was, oh my gosh, she was in bed before she died. She was very old. And she'd smile all the time. You'd come to see her and say, Maureen, what are you smiling about? She says, I'm smiling at Jesus, she'd say. Well, she was, you know, a very devout Christian woman. She was ready to go. She was happy. She was full of love and joy. And John said, are you talking about Marlene's mother? And I said, yep. And he said, oh, man, she zipped right up here. He said she took the express elevator, and she was here in a flash. Mm-hmm. So when you're open and ready, it goes more quickly. And there are things that we create barriers in our life. I just actually did a blog about this. There are four major, I tried to simplify, but there were four major barriers. One being fear can delay, you know, how quickly you transition because you're, and death itself, you know, you're just afraid to go. Mm-hmm. And I kind of break that out a little bit. Another is belief system. You can have a belief system that will slow the transition because maybe you don't believe you deserve to go to heaven or to go to a grand place, or you believe there's nothing at all. And you're such a devout atheist that's it. I mean, you die, that's it. Well, that works really well intellectually while we're here being cool. But I will tell you, an hour before the end, and you think, I'm going to go poof and just be gone. That's a real hard pill to swallow for anybody with an ego, anybody with any caring about people around them or any of it, just to realize that's it. I mean, there's like nothing. So those people, if they could just open up enough to say, well, I don't believe this, but maybe, you know, just maybe there's the potential for that, then that allows enough wiggle room that this fear is not so overwhelming at the end that it really causes issues for them in the actual transition of getting to where they need to be.
Taking this one step further, there are 12 major and countless other religions and faiths in the world. Are the messages that are being shared with you universal?
Oh, I asked John I asked real detailed questions of other people, not so much. But I said, John, are there religions up there? And he said, no, we don't separate like that. There's no distinction at all. So isn't that interesting?
Absolutely. So no matter what your belief or not belief is, you still have the opportunity to experience that when you get there.
And guess who else is up there? because I asked him about, I said, well, where does somebody like Hitler go, right? And he said, well, he's up here too. But he said, they're all up here. Everybody's here or over here, not up, over here. But what happens at the frequency thing, the ones that hang with the big dogs like Jesus and Mother Mary and Buddha and, you know, all the ascended masters, like John calls them the big dogs. And it's really not being nasty. When God has come to me, he's kind of giggled about that, thought that was cute. When your life passes before you, when you get there and you kind of like see your life and reflect on it, your suffering is when you feel the pain you inflicted on others. Do you see what I'm saying? It's not an intellectual, I know what I did wrong. It's a feeling what they felt, but magnified, I don't know, 1,000 times. Yeah. So the impact of that, what you did, is extraordinary to your soul. And when you're going through that period, your frequency comes down, 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 down. So for all the souls floating around over there, they don't even see these people who are going through that, because their frequency is so low and they're suffering. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And John said, Mom, he said, I think some of them are going to be there a long time, even for up here, a long time.
So in essence, what we think of as hell is really just to feel the pain that we've given to others.
Yes. And I had a hell dream, which I talk about in my book, that let me experience. I have no idea what that was. I woke up, I went in and I prayed for help. Please let me, what happened to me? And I heard, you have just experienced hell. It was the most horrible feelings of, it was around guilt. Mm-hmm. And it was excruciating. And of course, my stuff is nothing compared to some people, you know. But no, it's fascinating. And there's so much, and it's so complex. But only God could create something that complex and that amazing and still give us 100% control. When he said free will, when he gave us free will, he meant it.
Absolutely. The recurring theme from your writings and work, as we discussed, is that love is the answer to everything. How may we open our hearts and keep them open in these times of fear and despair?
You know, faith is a wonderful word, and people connect faith to religion, which is silly. You can have faith in a person, you can have faith in yourself, you can have faith in the universe, you can have faith in an angel, you can have faith in whatever you choose to have faith in. But without faith, you have a very difficult time seeing the positive in anything or getting through the really tough times. You have to believe it will eventually end. You have to believe there's going to be a fix or a solution, or you're going to be impervious to it, or you've got the answers, or whatever it is you have faith in. But faith, I think, really helps get us through some of the fear issues where love wouldn't work there, you know?
Absolutely.
So that part of it, I would say faith on this one.
I had a mentor in seminary who said that everything is unfolding in divine order. I think that's the answer, that we have to have faith that that's the truth.
Oh, for sure. It's never our timeline.
That's right.
That's for sure. Timeline.
What would you like readers to take away from Hi, Mama, It's Me?
Well, I guess I want them to know that it's not just a mom-son story. It's not just me talking about how great my son is. It isn't a book like that at all. It's about rebuilding a relationship after somebody passes, how that's possible, and opening up the voices to all these other souls who are there, who want to encourage connection, who want to tell bits of their stories and make points that are relevant in our lives. So it's a very rich book that's unusual and surprising, and I would encourage people to suspend judgment. And if you get to a part you don't agree with, just just say, oh, that part's fantasy, and continue to read, because the underpinnings are so rich and so beneficial that it would be worthwhile.
Her name is Sandy Cowan. Her book is called Hi Mama, It's Me. Sandy, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
You bet. The book is available on Amazon now, actually, in either Kindle or softcover. And you can also find the book on my website, Sandy Cowan, with an E, CoWen.com. And on the initial, the books are just being shipped to me because it just went on Amazon. So it'll take, you know, probably a week for them all to come. And then we can start fulfilling orders here. So it's probably a 2-week delay if you order on my website. But I can autograph them. So that helps.
Sandy, thank you so much for joining us and sharing this message of hope.
Thank you, Victor, for having me. It was a pleasure.
And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor, the voice, Berman. Have a wonderful week.